Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
This podcast is supported by Cartier. In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, Cartier shares testaments of love in all its forms from around the world. Please keep listening for today's love story later in this episode.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Breakups have always been bad, but then they got Instagram bad. That's how Sage Cruiser felt, anyway. Kirsten Vangsness, who stars in the CBS drama Criminal Minds, reads Sage's essay, cropped out of my own fantasy.
On my computer desktop, I have a folder within a folder that's labeled in a message to myself, "Do not open." Big surprise. I recently opened it. It's full of adorable pictures of my ex and me that I had erased from every other location. One drew me in. A black and white photo of us from the trip we took to the Oregon coast for his birthday 2 summers earlier. Just after we attended my mother's backyard wedding outside my hometown, Portland, Oregon. My mouse hovered over the image. Then I double-clicked to enlarge. With our elbows in the sand, we smiled as his hand caressed my left forearm, his dark hair and eyes contrasting with my light features. My right fist, mostly concealed by my black hoodie sleeve, hid half of my coy white smile. That picture had been everywhere. On Facebook, where I'd made it my profile picture, in his office, on our living room wall, and on his grandparents' coffee table in Iowa. It was taken about 6 months into our relationship, during our honeymoon phase, and a lot of people had gushed to us about it, saying things like, "That's a perfect picture," and, "You guys are such a beautiful couple." What they didn't know was how ridiculously hard we had worked to get the shot right. The camera was set to timer mode, so we'd press the button, rush into position, and attempt to look natural for the snap. We'd take one shot and then analyze the result. "I look crazy."
"Oh, I look like an old man."
"You're forcing it." Is my left eye melting off my face?" It went on like that until our muscles ached from smiling and the sun went down. But with the help of some tasteful editing, the final version looked effortless and pure. And because of the timer, we may have even fooled some people into believing it wasn't a boastful selfie. I used to love telling the story of how we met, but now I don't, so I won't. What really matters is this. I failed to take seriously that he had, just a day before we began our romance, broken up with his previous long-term girlfriend. I routinely repressed thoughts that I could be the rebound girl or a placeholder for him until the real deal came along. I pushed forward, drawn to his good looks, intelligence, and manners. I loved how expressive he was with his hands when he spoke. Despite the good, I always felt as if I had to prove to everyone that he and I were happy and that our relationship was legitimate. And social media helped. On Facebook, I was able to exclude the negative, dismissive comment here, a lie there, and showcase not only how I wanted others to see us, but how I wanted to see us. Sometimes he would comment on how he thought I'd be happier with a Pacific Northwest lumberjack type who wasn't as straight-laced as he was. To be fair, I was the one who convinced him to grow a beard, trying, I suppose, to nudge him toward the image of the boyfriend I had imagined for myself. Almost exactly a year after the black and white selfie that we spent forever posing for, we got another envy-inspiring picture. This one was in color and set on a Ferris wheel on the Seattle waterfront, the Great Wheel. We road-tripped up there in August for his birthday and stayed with my cousin. We must have posed 10 times for my cousin's camera before we got the perfect photo. Puget Sound behind us in striking aquamarine, distant hills in the background. Our smiles were big and white, and my shoulder was nestled comfortably under his arm. A colorful new addition to the public exhibit of our relationship. We labored over his Facebook status to make it casual, but warm, brief, but heartfelt. Celebrated a great birthday week with Sage Cruiser in the Seattle area. I love you, he whispered to me that night as we fell asleep. 2 months later, shortly after we had moved into our second apartment, he woke up saying his stomach hurt.
Was it the fajitas from last night?
I asked, yawning as I snuggled into the fluffy white covers he'd thrown aside a few moments before. He sighed and sat down at the end of our bed, his head wrapped in his hands. I was grinning like an idiot with my eyes partly closed.
No.
I poked my head up. What's wrong, baby?
I can't see our future.
I threw the covers back.
Hold on, are we having the conversation I think we're having?
He turned to me with sad eyes and tight lips. I almost felt bad for him until I remembered that I was the one getting the boot. He was vague in his reasons for ending it, saying he'd been thinking about it for 6 months. Did you ever love me? I asked. He paused and then stammered through an explanation. But the pause said it all.
I cried from my chest in our bed, wearing an oversized t-shirt, red-faced and choking on my own spit. And then it was over. We both changed our profile pictures within 2 hours of the split. He changed his from a cutesy picture of us in a Portland coffee shop to a solo picture of him in a suit. I swapped out the black and white beach picture to one of me standing alone on the summit of a mountain in Ireland, steely-eyed, with an expression that I hoped said, "I'm on top of the world, and I'm thriving." With each like, I felt my ego being rebuilt. But the high wore off as I packed my things and moved into my mother's basement, which wasn't on top of anything. Family and friends were shocked. I had sharp pains in my stomach every time I thought about him. I'd stare at my ceiling for hours. I was lost in confusion and feelings of betrayal and hatred. Even so, I fantasized about reconciling and having everything go back to the way it was. The following week, word got back to me that he had opened an online dating account the day after he dumped me. His profile image made my throat seize up. He had cropped me out of the Great Wheel picture, leaving his white teeth and green eyes beaming at potential future lovers and the radiant water contrasting with his dark hair. Mere inches from his head, smiling my big toothy smile. I had been sliced out of my own fantasy. Two weeks later, after the dividing of belongings, after the crying and dry heaving and listening to Adele on repeat, I received a handwritten letter from him. He included it in a package with a sports bra of mine he'd discovered in the hamper, using its return as an opportunity to get a few things off his chest. The letter provided the same vague explanation he'd given before, confessing he still couldn't think of any specific reasons. It was just a feeling, and he still missed me a lot. I wondered what might come of a response, but I never sent one. Instead, I corrected his spelling and grammar with a red pen.
finding some satisfaction in that. I wanted my perfect love to look like what I'd convinced myself I had. The photos, the Facebook statuses, the beard, the narrative of our relationship I'd woven into my head. I had fallen in love with the man I wanted him to be and the woman I wanted to be. I had fallen for what I thought we could be together, not the reality of who we actually were. That was a hard truth to swallow. Soon after my dive into my not-so-hidden folder, I met up with an old friend I hadn't seen in over a year and a half. We took a weekend camping trip to Cannon Beach, the same place I had captured the black-and-white photo nearly 2 years prior. After we had caught up and made a fire, she confessed she had gone through a breakup with her current boyfriend that seemed similar to my situation. Her guy had ended it abruptly when she thought everything was great, and they went a month without any communication before reconciling when he said he wanted her back. She found it uncanny that we had experienced such similar breakups but ended up in opposite spots. She raved about her newfound happiness, saying she'd marry him if he were to ask. We sat quietly on the cool sand next to the crackling fire as I stared up at a yellow kite. Its long tail dancing in the sky against the evening's wispy clouds. She broke our silence with a question. Say you two could be together again someday. Would you want that? I looked at her. And back up at the kite and said, no.
Kirsten Vangsness, reading Sage Cruiser's essay, Cropped Out of My Own Fantasy. So how does Sage feel about social media now? We will find out after the break.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
We're back. It's Modern Love, the podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Sage Cruiser has one piece of advice for you.
Don't get an Instagram. Don't do it. Don't get one.
And since her essay came out, Sage has forsworn social media. And she says she doesn't miss it.
I think social media has become this looming alternate reality of sorts. And I personally allowed it to take over this aspect of my life, my relationship. In some ways, it was one tool that I used to construct an image of what I wanted this relationship to be. And that's hollow. It's not authentic. And so it's been great for me to only have to focus on my real life.
So swearing off Instagram and Facebook has worked for Sage, but it's also been difficult for her to think back on how dedicated she used to be to her online image.
I remember leading up to the piece, it being published, I was very anxious. And I think a lot of that stems from shame, honestly. And none of us want to admit that we staged these photos, that we're pretending. It's something that so many of us do. And I think I convinced myself, oh, that's not me. And so that is what is the most embarrassing, is that I was exactly what I used to tell myself I wasn't.
Sage and her ex-boyfriend have not talked since they broke up. Although she did send him an email telling him that their story was going to be published in the New York Times. She doesn't know if he's read it or not and says she's put their relationship behind her. But what Sage learned from their breakup has stayed with her.
I think now I approach relationships with a little more responsibility. I know myself a little more. I know my weaknesses. I'm willing to face the fact that I am very imperfect. I make many mistakes. I know I will continue to make many mistakes. And I embrace and face that messiness now instead of trying to make it appear as if that messiness does not exist.
Sage Cruiser. She's 24 and lives in Seattle doing environmental work for AmeriCorps. After the break, we'll hear from Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times, and Kirsten Vangsness on her own frustrations with social media.
I'm Julie Turkowitz. I'm a reporter at the New York Times. To understand changes in migration, I traveled to the Darien Gap. Thousands have been risking their lives to pass through the border of Colombia and Panama in the hopes of making it to the United States. We interviewed hundreds of people to try and grasp what's making them go to these lengths. New York Times journalists spend time in these places to help you understand what's really happening there. You can support this kind of journalism by subscribing to the New York Times.
Dan Jones says that this essay reveals that tech hasn't changed love itself, but the ways we communicate about it.
In Sage's story, what becomes so clear is what an influence social media is in our romantic lives, in our personal lives, and how it changes how we present ourselves. Like, we didn't used to have, you know, big audiences for our relationships. And now, depending on your social media presence, you can have a huge audience. And it's interesting how that cycles back into your decision-making and how you think about your relationship as some kind of performance for this audience.
Kirsten Vangsness says that this essay really speaks to her own frustrations with social media.
We can tell this narrative that kind of keeps us at an arm's distance from people, but at the same time makes them think they know something about us. And it makes us get tricked into thinking that that's what our real life is. I related to this because I think we all go through that. I go through that because I see pictures of myself, you know, with my fancy day job. And it can trick you into being like, that somehow, you know, what makes a life elevated is the way it looks, not the, you know, all of the juicy stuff that happens inside of our bodies when we are brave and expanded.
Thanks again to Kirsten Vangsness for reading this week's essay. You can see her now in Criminal Minds on CBS. Next week, Julia Stiles, who stars in the show Riviera, reads an essay about the complexities of dating your roommate.
That's the only word for it. I had a big, huge crush on my roommate. I imagined my eyes as cartoon hearts, my tongue a Tex Avery wolf tongue, my hands tied by the truth, universally acknowledged, that dating someone's roommate is a very stupid thing to do. An irresponsible thing to do, even for a 22-year-old. And all of my life, I have been nothing if not responsible.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, Amory Sievertson, and Caitlin O'Keefe. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.